Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Yeah,
streaming live on
Let's
the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Oh, happy Friday to everyone. Yes, we're doing Bold Take Friday today. That's coming up a bit later in the show. We're also going to have the professor, John Clayton, joining us for a packed first hour. It only gets better from there. I need to remind you guys, we're also taking calls. It is a Friday. Everyone's excited to head into the weekend. And just as we do every single Monday and every single Friday, we are opening up the phone lines at 1 p.m. So I'll tell you the question. I'll tell you the number to call. All of it heading up later in the show. Before that, Pete Carroll does the Pete Carroll preview on Cairo Radio, and it airs every single Friday morning. So you get to hear the latest from the head coach before he speaks to the media around 2 p.m. Said some interesting stuff today, Jake. So he was talking. Yes. He was speaking with Steve Rabel, again, on Cairo Radio. And he has kind of an idea of how he wants to win this weekend. Now, it's not too unlike the way that Pete Carroll might always want to win. But I would imagine he gets a little more control when you've got a backup quarterback in because he loves a balanced attack. He loves winning on the ground and with the run game. And you might get to do that a little bit more when you don't have Russell Wilson in there. So this was Pete Carroll when asked, what did the Seahawks need to do differently on offense this week with Geno?
We really have to balance ourselves out and make sure that we have the balance that allows Geno to be comfortable, and so that we can make him available for the play action game and all that kind of stuff. We have to put the ball on the ground and hammer it some. And that's no different than what we would always like to do. We're so accustomed to Russ being able to take whatever throws we need to call on. So I just want to make sure that we're really got a balanced attack at it, and we still want to be explosive. We still want to go for it, and Geno's got all that arm, and he's been throwing the ball over the yard all week. He's ready to go.
Important for me to note very quickly, just as an aside, that like phone chime you heard in the background, I think was Pete Carroll. You can tell because it's on the recording multiple times and because it's incredibly loud and he's almost 70 years old. Like, that's how you know. It's when I hear any of my parents' ringtones, it's like, oh my God, did you want to hear this from outside?
Between that and the Bart Starr reference a couple weeks ago,
yeah.
You
forget sometimes when you're out there on training camp, Pete Carroll, he's wearing this easy breezy, like all white outfit. He's running around. He'll run all the way down the field. And then you hear the phone, the text alarm, and you're like, oh, yes. Okay, now I remember. Oh, God love him. But here's the thing. So Pete Carroll wants to win with a balanced attack. He wants to win with a focus on the run, setting it up, and then taking some deep shots down the field. That's a quintessential Pete Carroll offense. It's exactly what he wanted to do when they had Marshawn Lynch and a young Russell Wilson. And it's what they've had to get away from at times when they've really struggled with the run game. Now, the good news is you have one of the best running backs, actually the best running back you've had since Marshawn Lynch, with Chris Carson. He gave you 2 1,000-yard seasons. He's phenomenal. Problem, he was supposed to practice yesterday. He did not practice yesterday. Not only that, it sounds like he might not go this weekend. Here's what Pete Carroll said.
Chris, we'll see at the end of the week, see what the situation is with him. He's much improved, but yet still not cleared. He's not cleared to get back yet. I'm really fired up about Rashad Penny coming back next week. He'll be back next week, cleared to come. He's ready to go right now, and he's one more week on IR to get there. So we'll build that back up. The other fellas are doing good and ready to play.
Now, ignore the Penny comment for now because
he
won't be playing this weekend. But, Jake, here's my question, for all of us. Pete Carroll wants to win the game his way, wants to win the game with a balanced attack and with a good run game. Can you do it without Chris Carson?
I don't like that cut at all that we just listened from Pete Carroll, because the truth is that Chris Carson most likely is not going to play in this game. That I would be shocked based off of that, based off of the prognosis that Pete Carroll gave, a very positive review in terms of how Chris Carson handled the weekend and how he was coming back, and everything looks very positive, and hey, we're going to hold him out till Thursday and let's see what it looks like, to him not practicing Thursday, and now him basically saying that he's not cleared yet, and then quickly moving on to, hey, Rashad Penny's going to come back.
Yeah. That Chris Carson not cleared, but oh my God, Rashad Penny is going
to
be here soon.
That's right. Let's see if I can distract everybody. That is not something I like to hear. And to answer your question, Stacy, no, you can't. Alex Collins is a good back. I like Alex Collins a lot, but he is not a player that you can just give the total workload to against a very good defense, a Steelers defense that ranks ninth in the NFL in run defense, and expect him to be the guy that's going to be able to get you through. I love him in combination with Chris Carson, but Carson is such an important aspect to this offense. He is such an important aspect to the running game and the physicality and the playmaking ability that he brings you. Not just, you know, it's not, hey, Chris Carson, we're used to see him, you know, rip off 60-yard runs, but it's the dirty work that he does mm-hmm. that I appreciate so much. It's the ability to make positive gains out of bad muddy situations at the line of scrimmage. It's his ability to get yards after contact, and those hard yards are what you need heading into the Sunday night matchup when, guess what? The Steelers, they know very well Pete Carroll and his philosophy or his hopes and his desires in terms of wanting to balance this thing out, wanting to run the football, knowing that it's going to be a priority for the Seattle Seahawks offense so that you don't have to put all of the burden on Geno Smith.
So here's a follow-up question. Let's say that it's kind of unfair to expect Alex Collins to carry your team. It's not that Alex Collins isn't capable. We've seen him really find success with the Ravens prior to coming to Seattle. And we know that right now he's that backup kind of, not necessarily a change of pace back, but a really great backup for Chris Carson, a nice complimentary piece, like you said. If it is unfair to expect Alex Collins to be kind of the workhorse in this one and to shoulder the burden, then does Geno Smith just throw it all over the yard? Like, what's the answer there on offense?
Well, the answer there to me is that you still have to still try and establish that running game. You still have to have that ability to be balanced and make the Steelers continue to respect it. And the truth is that Geno Smith, I mean, unless you're Ralph in Bellevue on Monday calling in saying that,
hey Ralph,
that Geno
please
is
call
going
today.
To be,
shout out to my guy,
is going to be just as good and explode onto the scene.
What if Ralph?
As
we don't know
Kyler
that Ralph
Murray.
Is wrong, first of all.
Okay, but that's what Ralph in Bellevue's predicting. Unless you're Ralph in Bellevue and you're carrying that mentality heading into Sunday night, the truth is that Geno Smith is a very good backup in this league. He is not somebody that can carry the workload for an offense. Very few quarterbacks in this league can do that and win you football games on a consistent basis. And for me, as you're heading into Sunday night football, you're going into Pittsburgh against a very good defense. I don't care what the stats say. I don't care what the beat writers say. As I watch the film, I look at a very good defense that flies around, that's got dudes at every level. They're going to make you earn it, absolutely earn it. So you're going to have to help protect Geno Smith, not just in pass play, but through the running game, by taking the burden off of him in a variety of different ways so that you can, as Pete Carroll said, maximize his talents and his strengths. And when he's got opportunities to take shots down the field, he's more than capable of making that happen.
What are those talents and strengths?
Well, Geno is a very talented passer. I mean, make no mistake about it. He is not somebody that I would look at as an aging veteran quarterback in this league that, okay, you look at their pedigree or their history and you go, okay, this guy's been around a while, but you realize that they can't push the ball past 40 yards down the field. Chase Daniel is a guy that everybody applauds as a great backup in this league. I would be, the season would be over if Chase Daniels was our quarterback. Geno Smith is a better player than that. He still has all the talent to make all the throws. He's very mobile, and he's got good experience and has had great experience backing up three Hall of Famers. But what he isn't is he's not a guy that, through his history here in the league, and you got to look back to his time with the New York Jets, his career has been more interceptions to touchdowns. His career has been under 60% completion percentage. So that's really who Geno Smith has been as a quarterback in this league thus far. And so what you have to do is you have to make sure that you keep him clean, you keep him confident, you keep him in rhythm. Offensively, you're staying ahead of schedule in terms of down and distance. You're constantly in manageable third down situations so that you don't have guys like Melvin Ingram and TJ Watt pinning their ears back and rushing the passer. So that's what you've got to do to try to protect Geno Smith as much as humanly possible.
Do you guys remember when Mike Leach had that press conference and the reporter joined like 20 minutes late or whatever, and he asked a question and Leach said something like, well, my, look who's the late one or something like that, because the reporter tried to call him out for being late, but then he realized that the reporter missed the first 20 minutes. Ah. You guys know what I'm talking about, Jess? Everyone remember
that? It rings
that?
A bell.
Leach going, does, well, but I don't my. I got to find the cut. I hope that that's Ralph on Monday. I hope Ralph calls into the show after Geno Smith throws for 450 yards and 5 touchdowns, and we just give him the line, and he just, well, my. Well,
Ralph backing Geno Smith reminds me of that video online of the guy who's like DJing a set, and there's like 3 people dancing to it, and Ralph is
yes!
one of those people dancing to
my
Geno
guy.
Smith's music.
Now, I don't know that that's going to be Geno Smith's approach, but I mean, I do think it's important. I understand that what I'm doing right now is looking at on paper stats, and that in real life, on the field, establishing that run is just as important to finding success, especially when you've got a backup quarterback. Even if I think passing is a more efficient approach, obviously it can't be the only approach. You look at, I think it was 2 years ago, maybe the Atlanta Falcons were like the number one team in pass attempts. Yeah, because they didn't have a run game and teams knew exactly what they were going to do. So that can also come back to bite you if you don't at least have the threat of the run. You have to make them respect it.
Right.
That said, I mean, the Steelers are more susceptible against the pass versus the run. Mm-hmm. Brooke Pryor, ESPN Steelers reporter, was on with Wyman and Bob, and she said, look, if you're going to look at weaknesses of this defense, outside of, hey, they aren't on pace for the sacks and interceptions they had, they've been giving up the occasional big play. Like, they have been susceptible in that secondary to giving up a 50-yard bomb, to giving up a 43-yard bomb.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like there's an opportunity there for Geno Smith and a guy like DK Metcalf or Tyler Lockett.
If DK's playing. DK didn't practice yesterday either.
That's,
I mean, DK's
true.
Out with a foot injury, so that's another one that you're looking at and you're going, oh, man, is this guy going to play? I have every belief that he will. One, he's never missed a game so far in his career. He's extremely competitive. And then lastly, he's also technically in a contract year when you talk about extensions and when those typically happen. You know, he has all the incentive in the world to want to play in this game. So I have to imagine that DK will end up suiting up, but I don't love the fact that he is a game time decision. This is the first time that we've really seen him go this long into the week without practicing.
I was going to say, it's not the first time you've seen him on the practice report with a foot injury. He's been dealing with a foot injury for a while. Typically, what you see when you look at those practice reports is on a Wednesday, guys will have the most limited practice. That's when they're coming back. So if you see a guy out on Wednesday, it doesn't mean he's not suiting up. The most important thing you want to see is an improvement in the designation. So you want to see, if you're out Wednesday, were you limited Thursday? If you were limited Wednesday, were you full participant Thursday or Friday? So what Jake's is saying is you haven't seen Metcalf remain out through the full week. And if he's out again today, like, that's not good news.
No, if he's out again today, then his chances of playing are probably slim to none. Because Friday, it just, in all honesty, Friday, if you can't go through a walkthrough practice, that's what Fridays are, then you're in bad shape. So I think that this is going to be one where you probably see DK as limited, and then we'll see if, and probably go into the game questionable, and we'll see what ends up happening there. But you're right. They have been susceptible to big plays, and DK being a part of that lineup would be huge in order for Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf to have chances to take shots downfield, because after that, you're looking at Penny Hart and Freddie Swain being your number 2 and 3. You got Gerald Everett coming back, which is a big boost to your offense, but that is thinking in addition to what you already have. So overall, I do look at the Steelers' passing defense, and that's an area that you can exploit, but only if you're able to establish that running game. Only if you're able to limit T.J. Watt and Melvin Ingram and the rest of that crew from having to respect other elements of your running game and not being able to pin their ears back and just fully go full bore at the passer, at Geno Smith. So that is going to be the unique challenge for Shane Waldron for this offense. And in order for them to get the best results out of Geno, which we all want, you've got to be able to have that moving into Sunday night. This is a critical, critical game. Two teams back against the wall, both playing for their playoff hopes.
All right, well, speaking of the run, is it Alex Collins who needs to step up in the absence of Russell Wilson to get the Seahawks a win? Is it someone on defense? It's a question I want you to think about. We're taking your calls with that question at 1 p.m. First, though, it is time for Headline Rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
history made last night. The Kraken notching their first ever victory on Thursday. Here was the game-winning goal from Brandon Tanev.
A handoff for Appleton. Empty net. Just wide off a stick. McCann in front. Bullseye! It's Brandon Tanev with his second of the game. And Seattle has a two-goal lead.
They held on winning 4-3 against the Predators. What's the real headline?
Now, the real headline should probably be, yes, the Kraken got their first win, and very importantly, they did it looking like the team we thought they could be. The headline I want it to be is, more importantly, Kraken got their first ever fight.
Shout out Vince Dunn.
First fight in franchise history. That's what I was waiting for. I know that everyone's like, oh, we wanted to see, you know, what they would look like. Are you this defensive-minded team that doesn't make mistakes? And I was listening to Mike Salk this morning kind of break that down. And he was very pleased with how they look, looking more like the team where he thought these are going to be their strengths. And look, you saw that on display against Nashville. But I was mostly just looking forward, like, when are we going to see the fight? Who's going to throw the first punch in franchise history?
Yeah.
Now we know.
Outside of the fight, though, it was so much more physical. That game was way more physical than the Vegas Knights game. And it was good to see. It was good to see that they, you know, started to settle in, get more comfortable, start to establish their presence a little bit more. And it also made for very, very entertaining hockey. I mean, There were multiple times where you saw guys get checked and shoulders getting lowered and guys falling flat on their back. I mean, just, I love hockey. This is fun, man. I love it. And congrats to the Kraken for getting their first ever win in franchise history. We're still going through a whole bunch of firsts this season, but it is going to be great to get past that point and really start looking at the Kraken in terms of, are they a playoff team? How far can they go? And you know, really, you know, getting past a lot of the firsts. But the one first that I cannot wait for is their first home opener here in Seattle. That's the one that
it's going to be amazing. Well, and I was watching the game, and you had some Titans players at the game, and I was thinking, like, I wonder who all is going to be at the home opener. You're going to have, like, Seahawks players, Mariners players. There are going to be, like, Storm players. I would imagine there are going to be a bunch of, like, Seattle representatives, athletes in the stands watching and cheering on this new team. Like, it's going to be, like, celebrity-packed.
It is going to be celebrity-packed, and when you have, you know, Jerry Bruckheimer as one of your owners, and you've got a whole
just
whole
random
crew that,
wait, is that Tom Cruise at the Kraken game?
What is he doing here?
Renee,
he's going
to
come down like Mission Impossible from the top.
Can you imagine?
I mean, just
take,
you know,
that, Vegas.
Can we get Liam Neeson there to give his
if
release
they
the Kraken?
If they got Liam Neeson to do a play on Taken, a spoof on Taken for some kind of promotional video at the home opener, they could lose every game and I'd be happy with this season. That's a lie, but it would be amazing.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, trade in the NFL this morning. The Arizona Cardinals dealing a 2022 fifth round pick to Philadelphia.
That's right.
For tight end Zach Ertz. What's the real headline?
So the Eagles traded Zach Ertz to the Cards for a fifth round pick and a backup cornerback, to which the Seahawks asked, are you going to use that?
Come in handy.
Just give
me
the one.
At the Thanksgiving. Are you going to finish that?
Yeah.
Are you going to use that backup, that third roster spot corner in that fifth round pick? We'll take it.
We would desperately take it. Yeah, we would love that. In terms of the Arizona Cardinals making this move, I think it's a great move for them, honestly. And I know that it's not something that I'm looking at here in Seattle going, oh, why didn't we make that move? No, we're fine. We don't need another tight end. And, you know, Curtis Rogers would probably fall over in his chair in anger at another over 30-year-old tight end.
If Curtis sees one single tight end on this roster born in the 80s, his head will explode.
Oh, without question.
Miss me entirely with that. Zach Ertz.
You know what, Curtis, pretty soon it's going to be the 90s.
Yes, Curtis, he can. He caught a touchdown last night.
Can he even walk?
But I believe that when you're adding like the Arizona Cardinals are, what they're doing is they're seeing their opportunity. They're seeing the fact that in the NFC right now, in terms of their record, it's them, it's the Bucs, it's the Packers, and they have the best chance. They are in the driver's seat in terms of the NFC West, and they have made very good, timely moves to add with their young core and adding, aging veteran players, but actually getting good production out of them. So I think that this is a very good move for the Arizona Cardinals. I expect great results from it. Not that Zach Ertz is going to, you know, be this Pro Bowl-level tight end for them, but in terms of an added weapon on third down next to A.J. Green, next to DeAndre Hopkins and Christian Kirk and the rest of the crew that they have. Great pickup.
Look, Jake, I know that you're going to say this wouldn't have been a fit for Seattle, and Seattle doesn't need tight ends. And I know that Curtis hates anyone in their 30s and older. But that being said, where are the Seahawks tight ends then? They've not been involved at all. And we were talking all offseason that, well, Shane Waldron, former tight end coach, is going to be able to incorporate them more in the scheme. That was a weakness last year for this offense. Where have they been?
Well, the truth is, as I said before, is that they have not featured the tight end. They have not. The tight end in a lot of the offense has not been first in progression. And sometimes I've seen them try to call it, and it just hasn't been open, whether the defense has responded to it. It hasn't been anybody's fault, in my opinion. There hasn't been tight ends that have, I know that there's conspiracy theories that the tight end
Will
has just
Disley,
been
I'm over
roaming
here.
Wide open, Gerald Everett roaming wide open, and no one, and Russell Wilson just doesn't want to throw them the football. That hasn't been the case, but what I would say is that I was hoping that the tight end would be more featured in the offense and be more first in a lot of these progressions, first or second in a lot of the progressions in some of these offensive play calls to get Gerald Everett the ball specifically, and that hasn't happened up to this point. There's been little screens and things here and there while Gerald Everett has been on the field and healthy, but they just haven't had that rhythm yet, and so hopefully they'll find their stride. And honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if Geno Smith goes to Will Disley and Gerald Everett a little bit more, especially if DK Metcalf is going to be out on Sunday night.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three, some controversy to finish off.
Here we go.
The Dodgers-Giants series, L.A. surviving game five thanks to a phantom swing for strike three.
Oh, I'll ask about that in a second.
On the game's final pitch, what's the real headline?
Shout out to this series, though, for forcing a game five so we could continue to delay the inevitable. An Astros-Dodgers World Series.
Wow.
You know that it's coming. Hey, Curtis, did Wilmer go?
No, he didn't.
Jake, did Wilmer go?
No.
Yeah.
Nope.
I don't think so either.
No, he didn't. But, Stacey, how dare you? I do not.
You guys know this is happening. Why
no,
do we all pretend?
Not.
Why are we pretending? Why are we pretending that an Astros-Dodgers World Series is not how this season was always going to end?
Nope.
Are we going to pretend that that's not how it was always going to end?
Stacey, until it actually happens, I will not accept it, because you want to know what is going
like
to happen?
Squid Game, just people pulling the levers behind the scenes.
No, it's not, okay? It's not that sick, twisted TV show.
I don't know.
It is Freddie Freeman in all of his goodness and glory.
Let's go Braves.
Frederick.
Braves, let's do this thing. They are going to slay the Giant. They're going to get themselves into the World Series, and they are going to make this happen. And you know what? I just want the Red Sox to beat the Astros. I hate the Red Sox. I don't like being in this position, but if you're going to ask me to root for one over the other, I'm definitely picking
the Red Sox.
Rank
the teams. The Braves are number one. Rank the teams in order of how you would be forced to root for them in like 20
Braves,
seconds.
Braves, Dodgers, Red Sox, Astros.
There it is.
That's it right there.
That's
Braves,
the
Dodgers, Red Sox. Yeah, you're right. That's correct for me as well. All right. Taking a look ahead to week six in the NFL, getting some Seahawks injury updates with the professor, John Clayton. He joins us next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. The professor, John Clayton, joining us now. Hey, John, how are you?
Good, how are you?
We are good, happy on a Friday, but not so great news this morning, at least not great sounding news. We have no clear update on Carson yet, other than he hasn't been cleared. He was supposed to practice Thursday and did not. How optimistic are you he plays this weekend?
I'm not. I think that the fact that he didn't practice on Thursday is a big negative, and I get the feeling that there's a good chance that he's not going to be able to play. You know, still, sometimes when you have a neck injury like that, it takes time. And, right now, it's the time continues to hurt this team because, again, you now go into this game without your Hall of Fame caliber quarterback and now your 1,000-yard type runner, and that makes it even tougher to go on the road and beat a team like Pittsburgh.
John, and I don't want you to continue to be the rain of bad news here, but what are we thinking about DK Metcalf's situation? He as well did not practice yesterday. Really kind of the first time I've really seen him be in this situation before.
No, I mean, he's been off and on the last couple of weeks, missing a practice with a knee injury. I think he should be okay. I think it's just a sore knee or whatever. It's probably one of those things where, he needs to get to the bye week and get a little bit of a rest and all that stuff. So, you know, like I wouldn't call it a veteran rest day because he's too young for a veteran rest day. But I think they're just being extra cautious with him. I think he should be able to play. But again, we'll find out today because, you know, he should be able to practice. If he doesn't practice, then that's going to be bad news.
John, what's been the big difference for the Steelers' defense this year? They're still solid, but not quite as great as they were last year, especially with sack totals, interceptions, yardage allowed. What's been the difference?
Well, I think the difference is they played a little bit of a tougher schedule. Second is the fact that they don't blitz as much. You know, like you look at Baltimore, and they blitz all the time. Steelers don't blitz as much, and so because of that, and plus they don't have Stephon Tuitt, who is really an unbelievably good defensive end. You know, they still replaced him with Marvin Ingram temporarily, but it's a defense right now that's still really good. I mean, you can see it particularly going against Denver last week, you know, holding them to 7 points. But, you know, as a team, you know, they've kind of been down, obviously, with the bad start that they had going 1-3 and the offense, you know, not being anywhere close to where it needs to be. So there's some big issues right now there. But defensively, I mean, they're still one of the better defenses in the league.
John, the Arizona Cardinals made some waves this morning, making the move to trade for longtime Eagles tight end Zach Ertz. What do you make of the move? Does it enhance their offense?
It does. I mean, they lose Max Williams, who they liked a lot, you know, because he goes on injured reserve. And so now, you know, to be able to get Ertz, who's really good. Now, again, he's going to be costly. And, of course, it didn't cost him much as far as draft choice. What was a player and a fifth-round pick next year? That's reasonably cheap. But, I mean, he's a good tight end. I mean, you saw it just the other night. I mean, because, you know, he was making big catch after big catch, you know, particularly with Dallas Goedert hurt. So that you know, it's an upgrade, I think, from what they had in Max Williams.
Hey, John, who's going to need to step up big on the offensive side of the ball for Seattle?
You know, certainly I have to think, you know, in the running game, obviously it's going to be Tyler Lockett. You know, definitely you have to have DK Metcalf. I think, you know, Gerald Everett, and they got to start getting the ball to him, you know, now that he's come back off of COVID-19. And certainly, you know, at running back, I mean, you got, they have to do well at the running back position because I think that they need to run the ball and have good balance. So, you know, there's a lot of things. And of course, naturally, everything falls on the shoulders of Geno Smith. Because, you know, can Geno Smith make this all work as best as possible? Because he is going against a good defense. He is going against they're on the road and all those different things. So this is going to be a real challenge.
You know, John, the idea that, and it popped in my mind as I was driving in, I know there's a lot of expectations for Geno Smith, but I hope a lot of people don't turn on him if it doesn't go well. Because, you know, this is not his job for him to come in and have everything be on his shoulders to win this football game. You know, obviously he's replacing Russell Wilson, but they have to be able to balance this out, don't you think, John, with the running game here?
Oh, no question about it. But, of course, I mean, you talk about the, you know, turning on Geno Smith. I mean, hey, they're turning on Russell Wilson right now, which is absolutely ridiculous.
True.
I mean, it's like,
you got a point there.
That's how ridiculous his town is becoming, you know, because it's like, well, he's out there on the practice field and he's got a splint. It's like, hey, what about how bad he is? It's like, what are you talking about? Because I know right before I did my 8:45 segment with Mike Salk, I mean, he was taking some calls and, you know, they weren't real positive for Russell Wilson. And it's like, what are you people thinking? Obviously, you know, like I said, what are you thinking? It's like, what are you not thinking? Because they're not thinking.
Have you had a lot of people say, oh, what if Geno's better than Russ, or what if Russ is the problem to you?
No.
Okay. I see a lot of it on the text line, and I'm always like,
yeah,
wait, what? Like, I think that Geno is good, clearly, and I just think that people are maybe combining frustrations with what Russell Wilson said and then overlapping it with what they think he can do as a quarterback.
Yeah, and again, it's like that story never ends.
No.
It keeps coming back, and it drives me crazy because it's the most ridiculous story I've ever dealt with in all these years of covering the National Football League. And so it's like, yeah, just, okay, so he has a bad quarter, a bad half, and it's like, oh, yeah, well, he's going to be out of here because he doesn't want to be, he doesn't like it. And it's like, well, you people just shut up.
John, when it comes down to the Seahawks, and what is real is the fact that the Seahawks defense is struggling mightily. Right now, they are, their backs up against the wall in terms of their playoff chances, but also a NFL record in terms of five consecutive games potentially of giving up over 450 yards of total offense. What do you think has to change in order for that to happen? Who needs to play better in order for that to happen?
The linebackers and the secondary have to get in sync, because that just hasn't happened. I mean, you've got they leave like too many open spots in the middle of the field. I mean, Kirk Cousins took advantage of it. I mean, you saw him took advantage of it last week. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger, who, believe it or not, gets rid of the ball faster than just about any quarterback in the league, to take care of it. But, I mean, they've got to sync up because, again, whatever they're doing, it's not working. And, you know, not you talk about, you know, the five games like that, which will be an NFL record. Well, right now, they're on an NFL record for yardage gain allowed. I mean, the fact that it's over 454 yards a game is ridiculous. And so they've got to sync up better. Plus, they better stop the run. You know, because what are they giving up, 140 yards rushing the ball? That's not good. So there's a lot of things they've got to get better, and they got to get better fast.
Hey, John, I want to take a really quick look around the rest of the NFL in these final 2 minutes with you. I'll start with one of the most anticipated games, this one in the AFC. You've got Justin Herbert's Chargers and Lamar Jackson's Ravens facing off. Who do you like in that one?
I still like the Ravens because I think they're still a little more solid, even though, again, you know, they're so injured. You know, they're down to three running backs. You know, they hope to get Ronnie Stanley back. You know, because, again, they without their left tackle, their left guard, and all that stuff. But I'll tell you what, the Chargers, you know, I thought coming into the season they were going to be a wild card playoff team. Now you look at them, particularly with the play of Justin Herbert, which you're looking at as a team right now that may win the AFC West over the Kansas City Chiefs, and Herbert has just been phenomenal.
He certainly has been phenomenal, and it's also a great testament of Brandon Staley, what he's been able to do thus far here as a head coach for the Chargers. And, you know, John, I know it's way too early for these kind of conversations, but is there any other coach right now that you look at around the league that's an offensive coordinator, a defensive coordinator that has the same chops of what Brandon Staley has been, or any of these offensive whiz kids? Because Staley has been so impressive, even just after 1 year being a defensive coordinator.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's the thing, is that you know, he's so good now in rallying the troops, and you know, he did such a great job last year with the Rams to get the number one ranking. But I mean, he's done a great job because, again, I mean, he's fixed the problems that the Chargers have. I mean, the Chargers were terrible on special teams. Now they're better. They couldn't make fourth quarter comebacks. Now they can. Mm-hmm. And then you look at the fact that they can do some good things, you know, as far as red zone. They weren't real good in the red zone. Now they're better there. So it's like he's just coached everything up so well with his staff and himself.
Yeah, they've been a fun team to watch. Interested to see what he can do with them this year. He is the professor. John Clayton joins us every Friday. Thanks, John.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, John.
All right, guys, we tried this new thing to sports radio where we just decided one day to have some bold takes, and then we called them bold takes. Well, now we do it every single Friday. So it's time for you to text us your boldest Seahawks prediction. Does Geno Smith throw for 300 yards? Does Chris Carson actually play and get a touchdown? Does Jamal Adams get not just his first sack, but also his second? I want you to put yourself out there, and I want you to know what yours is. We'll use some of those to help us preview this game. So text your bold take right now to 206-421-3776. Coming up next.
It's time for Bold Take Friday.
It is Bold Take Friday on Jake and Stacey. Get those bold takes in right now for this game. 206-421-3776. That is the Mac and Jack's text line. Send them in right now. Now, this one's interesting. I'll start with this. Jake, I'm going to give one quick bold take from the text line. Keep those coming in. Jake, then I'm going to turn to you for your bold take, and I'll share mine, and we'll incorporate a lot of people's, and it's going to help us preview this game. From the 360, bold take, Benson Mayowa and Daryl Taylor combine for 3 sacks, and Carlos Dunlap bats a pass for a Jordan Brooks pick six. A big day on defense for this person. Now,
wow.
So that is our first bold take of the day. It is very bold. Two things I like about this. Number one, Daryl Taylor being in there combining with Mayoa for 3 sacks. I sure hope Daryl Taylor gets more snaps. He's the current sack leader on the team with 4. It is not how I expected him to start the season, not because he didn't look the part in camp, but because he was essentially going to be a rookie. He's been phenomenal. I hope we see him more in this game. Jake, do you think we will?
Yes, I do. I mean, you know, the one thing that Pete Carroll and this group has done a really good job of is if guys perform and they show it and they produce, they're going to be on the field. So Daryl Taylor absolutely will get more snaps, especially in the absence of production from guys like Benson Mayo and Carlos Dunlap, for that matter. You know, Daryl Taylor is the guy that you want to see emerge. You want to have that process go in. And honestly, I thought it would happen maybe in the second half of the season where you started to see him really come alive and you started to see him, Stacey, take over. And therefore, you feel really good heading into next year, maybe, you know, being more comfortable moving on from guys like Mayoa or Dunlap and starting to get younger out on the edge. So it's happened sooner than I expected, which is great news. So that's still a big night, but I like the boldness there. Can I get to my bold take?
Absolutely. Or if it's actually bold.
Yeah, I believe it's bold.
Okay.
Well, Geno Smith's been the talk of the town. I think that Geno Smith throws 3 touchdowns, all, and this is predicated off of if he actually plays, all to DK Metcalf if he ends up playing. If not, my backup choice is actually Gerald Everett.
Backup bold take is
to Gerald Everett. Then my second one has to do with the defense. Jamal Adams gets busy. Finally, Pete Carroll, Ken Norton Jr., they look at the way they've been using Jamal Adams and they say, you know what? We got to tap back into the way we used him in 2020. We've got to allow him to be more of a factor and be around the line of scrimmage and allow him to rush the quarterback around 20 to 25% of the time. That's where he's at his best. And because of that, he will have over 10 tackles, 2 TFLs, and he will have a sack and a half with a forced fumble.
I am predicting it. Jacob.
That was a head rush.
Now, I'm just going to throw this out there. DK Metcalf, insanely talented. DK Metcalf has not had a 3-touchdown game. In fact, he's had only 4 games with 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, I said it. Yeah, he's going to have a 3-touchdown night if he
plays.
All
right. You know what? I like it. I do. I like it. All right. How about this one? This person kind of in the same vein, predicting a big game for Geno from the 570. Where's the 570? Geno will pass for, wow.
I just saw these numbers.
Wow.
570 is Scranton, Wilkes-Barre, PA.
Oh, what's up, Steelers fan? Texting in.
Will you tell the people
Geno
what you said?
Geno will pass for 450 yards, 4 touchdowns, and will rush for 60 with a rushing touchdown. I just want to make sure. Hang on a minute. Hang on.
Exactly. All of a sudden, Geno Smith turns into the next Lamar Jackson.
500 combined yards and 5
Urban
combined
Meyer
touchdowns.
Urban Meyer would want that for
Geno
his
Smith
team.
Says,
oh, that 250-250 yeah. play. That's
Geno
that right there.
Smith says, put it on my back.
Oh, man. Now, someone else has defense. Fred and Birch Bay, bold take. Defense gets a pick six. Now, let's talk about what Big Ben's susceptible to. He can make mistakes. In fact, he's made them more often than not when he's forced to pass the ball a lot. If this pass rush gets going, I think that getting through that Pittsburgh offensive line, to me, is the key for Seattle's defense. And that sounds very obvious. It's always the key. But most especially with Ben, because he cannot have a great passing game anymore the way he used to.
No, he's not built for that, and he is definitely somebody that is a shell of his former self. He's not even I would not put him as a top 15 quarterback in this league at the current moment and what we've seen from him thus far, and that's a huge problem for the Steelers at right now. And so my big key is not necessarily the pass rush. It is the fact that they have to control Najee Harris with the running game. You know, heading into this game, after having a very successful offensive night last week against the Denver Broncos, when they finally got Najee Harris over 100 yards, he ran for 123 yards, I believe, in a touchdown. That really changed everything for them offensively and took a lot of pressure off of Big Ben. They have to be able to slow down that running attack, force the game on Ben Roethlisberger's shoulders, and if they can do that, they should be in good shape.
All right, bold take. Russ has been working on his southpaw so he can play a snap and keep his streak alive. I like that bold take. Let me throw in mine quickly before I get back to the text line because we got 3 minutes.
Keep the streak alive. Let's go.
My bold take. It doesn't sound bold, but I want you to think about where this defense is right now. My bold take. Cornerback DJ Reed will get his first interception, and Quandre Diggs will get his third.
Wow. Okay.
Multi-interception.
Two picks
game.
In a game. Multi-interception game. They didn't get an interception until Diggs got one week before last. He now has the only two on the team.
Right.
No cornerback has an interception yet.
You know, I actually really like this because for all the talk about the corners, DJ Reed, since he moved over to the other side, since Sidney Jones has come back, he has played very well. He's been aggressive. Even in the Rams game, you look at some of the completions that he gave up, he is right there in coverage. And those are the types of completions I can live with. If you give up a 12 or 15-yard completion and you are right there and it happens, you know, once or twice, I'm fine with that. It's no big deal. DJ Reed, you start to see him play more aggressively, even to the point where Troy Aikman couldn't help himself. Oh, this DJ Reed guy, wow, he's playing aggressively. They need to take a double move shot at him. No, he's just a good corner who is instinctual and can play that way. And finally, they're allowing him to do so, and they're giving him enough confidence that he can do that. So that was great to see, and if he continues to play that way, Stacey, then I think that you've got a good chance of your bold prediction coming true.
Seahawks haven't had a multi-interception game since?
Oh, let me guess, 2017?
No.
2018?
2020.
Okay.
They did it against Dwayne Haskins last year, but it's been, I believe, 8 full games since they've done that. So
who had those? DJ Reed had one. I know that.
And then you've also got interception Shaquille Griffin with the other.
All right. Let me throw this one in.
Can I address this question from the text line here real quick?
Yeah.
The 253 says, "Hey Jake, why are you down on Alex Collins? He gained over 1,000 yards for the Ravens. He is capable if the Hawks can win in the trenches." Well, yeah, that's the point, right? They've got to win in the trenches in order for Alex Collins to be successful. There's a different level of back that you go into. Alex Collins, if the offensive line can open up holes, he can be successful and he can be very capable. If it's muddy and the Steelers' defensive line is doing a great job not giving him clear, clean holes, it's going to be difficult because Alex Collins is not that type of runner that Chris Carson is that can gain yards after contact and do it consistently. So I'm not down on Alex Collins. I'm just realistic about him and realistic in the idea that he ran for 973 yards back in 2017, folks.
We're going to get back to some keys for the offense in four down territory. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Taking a look at the defense, though, next. In order to win Sunday night, the Seahawks defense needs to turn things around. So what have they been doing wrong? We're going to actually break it down and take a look at it. What needs to go right? That's next.